This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. The World Health Organization called on Friday for urgent action to prevent the spread of monkeypox in Europe, noting that cases had tripled in the region over the past 2 weeks. Since early May, a surge in monkeypox cases has been detected outside West and Central African countries, where the viral disease is endemic. 90% of all laboratory-confirmed cases registered worldwide, or 4,500 infections, are in Europe, according to the WHO. 31 countries and areas have now reported infections. Europe remains at the center of the expanding outbreak, and the risk remains high. The WHO does not think the outbreak currently constitutes a public health emergency of international concern, but officials have stressed that status will likely be reviewed again soon. The UN rights chief Friday called on Sudanese authorities to launch an independent investigation after security forces killed at least 9 demonstrators attending a mass protest demanding an end to military rule. Michelle Bachelet said in a statement that she was alarmed at Thursday's killings, including of a 15-year-old child, quote, even after the police had announced they would not use lethal force to disperse the demonstrators. The mass demonstration, which saw tens of thousands turn out across the country, was met with the deadliest violence so far this year. The death toll from protest-related violence has reached 113 since the military takeover led by Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan in last October. The latest fatality was reported Friday, after a demonstrator died from wounds sustained at a June 24th rally, according to pro-democracy medics. Find more on our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Friday urged his country's lawmakers and government officials to work fast on passing and implementing all measures Ukraine needs to take to join the European Union. In a speech by video link to the Ukrainian Assembly, President of the European Commission Ursula von der Leyen said Ukraine has a, quote, very clear European perspective, but the road to EU membership will take time and require hard work.
Ukraine now has a very clear European perspective, and Ukraine is candidate country to join the European Union. Something that seemed almost unimaginable just 5 months ago.
Addressing parliament members, Zelensky said Ukraine must become an EU member state quickly. Quote, we do not want Ukrainian mornings to start as tragically as the one today when Russian missiles hitting us like in Odessa region today, he said, referring to the Russian attack near Ukraine's Black Sea port of Odessa on Friday, which hit an apartment building and a resort, killing at least 19 people. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has appealed against the British government's decision last month to order his extradition to the U.S., AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The appeal, filed at London's High Court, is the latest twist in a decade-long legal saga sparked by his website's publication of classified U.S. documents. No further details about the appeal were immediately available. Assange's supporters staged protests before his 51st birthday on Saturday. His wife, Stella, among people outside the Home Office, calling for his release from prison. Julian Assange has battled in British courts for years to avoid being sent to the US, where he faces 17 charges of espionage and one charge of computer misuse. Charles de Ledesma, London.
A Florida judge has refused to delay the sentencing trial of Nicholas Cruz in the 2018 shooting at a high school in which 17 people were killed. Cruz's lawyers had argued that recent mass shootings in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas, unleashed a wave of emotion nationally that could bias the just-seated jury against him, and the July 18th scheduled start is too soon. Recapping our top story, the World Health Organization called on Friday for urgent action to prevent the spread of monkeypox in Europe, noting that cases had tripled in the region over the past 2 weeks. Since early May, a surge in monkeypox cases have been detected outside of West and Central African countries, where it is endemic. 31 countries and areas have now reported infections. Follow us on the VOA mobile app. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Nigeria is seeing a wave of attacks in several regions, and analysts say foreign workers and nationals are often targets of criminal gangs seeking to squeeze huge payments from employers.
That's Timothy Obiezu reporting on the kidnapping of mine workers in Nigeria. Details coming up also. The UN has condemned reports that the security forces in Sudan have killed protesters. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Authorities in Nigeria's central Niger state are searching for gunmen who attacked a mine this week and abducted several people, including four Chinese citizens. Nigerian media report the attack Wednesday killed an unknown number of workers. It is the second time this year that Chinese workers have been abducted in the state as insecurity spreads in Nigeria. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Niger State Police Commissioner Monday Balakoya says reinforcements have been sent to the Shiroro local government area where the Ajata Aboki mining site is located. Armed men attacked the site on Wednesday, opening fire on operators and killing an unspecified number while kidnapping workers, including four Chinese citizens. Balakoya says the mining site is far into the bush and that some security operatives, including the military, police, and local vigilantes, immediately responded to a distress call from the site and ran after the attackers. He said four police officers were killed, but did not disclose how many military personnel and vigilantes were affected. He also said security officials killed some of the armed men. The commissioner spoke to VOA on Friday.
For now, we are on the trail, and some of them were really neutralized. But we are still only trying to find out the exact number. That's the update for now. We are still investigating. The military, I cannot speak for them.
China's embassy in Nigeria has not made an official statement on the incident and was unavailable for comment Friday. State Governor Abubakar Sani Bello called the attack disturbing and urged security officials not to relent on efforts to restore peace in the state. Abuja-based security expert Patrick Agbambu says, given the record of attacks in the state, authorities should have been more vigilant.
Knowing that Niger State has been the flashpoint of such attacks in recent times, I expected more security to be in place. Foreign nationals are considered to be more lucrative persons to be not out for ransoms than for attention. It's going to become rampant and just maybe Nigeria becomes unsafe for business.
Nigeria is seeing a wave of attacks in several regions, and analysts say foreign workers and nationals are often targets of criminal gangs seeking to squeeze huge payments from employers. In January, three Chinese nationals working on a hydroelectric power project in Shiroro were abducted. Beijing has been warning nationals working in Nigeria to be vigilant in areas prone to attacks. In May, Chinese officials and representatives of local Chinese companies in Nigeria held talks on security matters. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Blind people in Cameroon were protesting this week against job discrimination when, according to witnesses, police bundled them up and dumped them outside the city. Despite the alleged abuse, the protests continue, as Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Scores of blind people continued a week-long protest Friday in the capital against job discrimination, despite allegations this week of police abuse. The visually impaired braved heavy rain Thursday in Yaoundé to protest in groups of nine along seven major streets. They raised their white canes and said the world should know that Cameroon's police abused them every day this week while they were asking the government to provide them with jobs. Arno Jikisi is a spokesperson for the protesters.
On a été copieusement bastonnés. Nos cannes blanches ont été détruites, nos vêtements déchirés.
He says on day one of the protests on Monday, Cameroon police destroyed their white canes, tore dresses, and arrested and detained blind persons for up to 6 hours. Jikisi says on Tuesday, while they protested in front of the Prime Minister's office, his group of more than 60 blind men was again abused by police. He says the police bundled them in buses, dumped blind persons outside of the capital Yaoundé, and told the sightless people to find their way back home. When contacted by VOA, Cameroon police acknowledged clearing the streets of the blind protesters for what they said were illegal protests. But officials at Yaoundé's First Central Police Station would not comment on allegations they drove blind people outside of Yaoundé and abandoned them. Eyewitnesses told VOA that police dumped the blind protesters in different districts outside of Yaoundé, some as far as 30 kilometers away. The protesters had to call family members or appeal for rides from drivers passing by to get home. Local media reported that blind people on Thursday protested the police abuse in towns, including Bamenda, Boya, and Banmayo. Tancho Fidel is president of the Bamenda-based organization for the realization of an inclusive society.
Blind people in Cameroon are not given jobs. They are considered as underdogs. When they come out to decry the situation, they are tortured. We want the Cameroon government to consider us as able people and normal human beings.
Cameroon passed a law in 2010 mandating protections for people with disabilities, including the visually impaired. But blind Cameroonians say most employers ignore the law, which is rarely enforced. Cameroon's government says there are about 600,000 blind people in the country and more than 1 million who are visually impaired. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
While the UN-sponsored Geneva talks failed to reach an agreement on the rules for long-awaited elections, parallel efforts are taking place to resolve disputes over access to Libya's oil revenues. The eastern branch of the Libyan Central Bank has warned it could start printing its own money again, and groups in the east are blockading oil facilities. Wolfgang Pochtai, former Austrian military attaché, discussed these developments and a U.S. initiative to preserve oil revenues with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
This is difficult to realize for the Central Bank of Libya Eastern Branch as long as they have no real access to funds. The key for them is to get their share of the oil revenues. The Eastern Branch of the National Oil Corporation could attempt again to sell its own oil. But although this time the situation is more favorable for them because of the peak of the oil prices and the war in Ukraine, it is still not very likely that it will work as long as UN, US and major international players refuse to accept it. Until 2020, the CBL East financed the Eastern Altini interim government with the help of local loans and funds from some Gulf states. I doubt that this will work again now.
The United States Ambassador and Special Envoy to Libya, Richard Norland, revealed the details of the Libyan Oil Revenue Administration initiative, which he called Beneficiary. He said the main objective of this initiative is to provide the necessary funds for basic matters such as pensions, subsidies, grants, in addition to the education, health, and other sectors, so that some of oil resources are allocated only for these purposes. Would that initiative be doable?
This depends on if we get the sincere agreement of all the key players, including the two governments, the Central Bank of Libya, the National Oil Corporation, and the two parliaments. This is certainly a very positive initiative with the aim to depoliticize the use of the oil revenues until Libya has a new elected government. An international oversight would be required. This could be done easily by one of the renowned audit firms. It would also help in the future a new government to start new major projects and there is a dire need for investments in almost every sector in Libya.
But he said that the beneficiary initiative was presented to the National Unity Government, the Fethi Bashar government, the House of Representatives, and the National Oil Corporation, and all relevant parties, and it received positive responses for that. What do you make of that?
I doubt that GNU Prime Minister Dabeiba is really sincerely willing to accept and implement this initiative, as it would take away from him his key weapon, money, to buy support from the militias and to attract his key followers by populist money gifts. I would like to remember on the billions of the so-called marriage support fund and the house loan program. So if this beneficiary initiative is being detailed and if it becomes more concrete, I'm quite convinced that Dabeiba will do everything to delay it, even if still officially supporting it. Remember, he did the same, exactly the same, before the called off December elections. On the other side, I'm pretty sure that Bashagha and the House of Representatives are really in favor of Norland's proposal, as this would weaken the Dabeiba's position significantly, as I've explained. It would be also very positive for the National Oil Corporation, as this would ensure access to the desperately needed funds for the oil corporation.
That was Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché, speaking with my colleague Mohammed Al-Shenawi. The United Nations and its partners have been trying to resolve the political standoff in Libya that began late last year when elections were postponed. Since then, Prime Minister Abdelhamid Dabeiba has remained in office. However, the parliament appointed Fethi Bashagha as prime minister. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, has condemned the reports that security forces in Sudan have killed at least 9 protesters. Anti-coup protesters took to the streets of the capital Khartoum and other cities yesterday and were met with force from security officers. Bachelet today said the report indicates the joint security forces used live bullets as well as tear gas and water cannon against protesters. She called for Sudanese authorities to conduct an independent and transparent investigation into the actions of the security forces. Protesters have gathered almost weekly since an October 2021 military coup ousted the country's civilian government. The protests that began yesterday continued into today. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. To all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Tanzanian authorities say violent clashes this month between police and ethnic Maasai villagers being evicted from their ancestral homes have left one officer dead and scores of villagers wounded. Rights groups are condemning the government's action as some Maasai families begin to leave for new homes far away. Charles Kombe reports from Handeni, Tanzania.
A 63-year-old Saibok Liza has found a new home in eastern Tanzania's Handeni township. It's about 600 kilometers south of his ancestral land in the Ngorongoro Conservation Area. Liza has 3 wives and 20 children. In this new environment, he is worried about the fate of their long-preserved tradition, including living in a traditional Maasai bomas. Liza says in Ngorongoro, the laws were strict and people were instructed about what to do with their land, so they had much time to invest in their tradition. But for now, he adds, the tradition of living in bomas, living with Maasai cattle, may diminish. He is among Maasai people who have left their land after a government eviction that has sparked protests and a violent police crackdown. Government officials say the Maasai have been asked to voluntarily leave their homes, located in parts of the Ngorongoro Conservation Area. They also say the goal of the eviction is to protect the conservation area from a growing Maasai population and their cattle. But activists say they are being forced out to make way for trophy hunting and conservation zones. Onesmo Lengurumwa is the executive director of Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition. Onesmo says they have been advising citizens to sit together with their government and write down their recommendations, and they have done that. The challenge comes on the government's side. It was like officials didn't want to receive or pay attention to the recommendations. What they did was continue with the strategies they already had planned. He says it is the government that has led the people to this stage. About 27 Maasai families already have shifted from Ngorongoro to Msomera village, where the government provides those evicted with a house and land where they can let their cattle graze. Martin Oleikayo is the Msomera village chairperson. Martin says the president's plan to move Maasai from the Ngorongoro conservation area is for the benefit of all the country. For all wild animals, they are for all of Tanzania. So, he adds that all the revenues collected from tourism activities from the conservation area benefit all citizens. Meanwhile, Liza is adjusting to a new life and a new home. But he's worried about those more than 300 families that remain in the area, who are reluctant to leave the only home they have ever known. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Handeni, Tanga, Tanzania.
An underwater art museum has opened off the coast of Senegal to shed light on ocean pollution and overfishing. The museum, which is the first of its kind in West Africa, serves not only as a work of art, but as a living nursery for fish and coral. Anika Hammarskjöld reports from Dakar, Senegal.
Waves lap up against the beach outside Oceanium, a scuba diving center and environmental organization in Dakar's Southern Plateau neighborhood. About 100 meters offshore and 5 meters below, eight sculptures rise from the ocean floor. Dutch and Italian artists Misha Sanders and Philip Putzer created the sculptures during an art residency in Dakar. VOA and other media were not able to visit the sculptures during a planned visit Monday due to poor visibility and rough seas. The works debuted at Dakar's Art Biennale, which continues through Tuesday. The goal is to bring more awareness to the pollution that surrounds the sculptures and thereby encourage a conversation about the environment. Charlotte Thomas is Oceanium's head of communications.
You see here in Senegal, the pollution is everywhere. You go in Dakar, you see waste all around you. And all that waste with the raining season who's coming, it's going to go into the sea. So if we are not protecting our land, we cannot protect our sea.
Besides Senegal's rampant plastic pollution, a surge of development projects over the last decade has transformed the coastline and eroded fragile ecosystems. Fish stocks have plummeted as commercial and artisanal fishing boats continue to use unsustainable fishing practices. In 2015, the government passed a law banning single-use plastics, but it was never enforced. Since then, versions of the law have passed, including in 2020, when legislation specifically targeted plastic cups, straws, plates, bags, and bottles, but those never went into effect either. Senegal-born Radwan El Ali is the diving director of Oceanium and for the underwater exhibit. El Ali has spent much of his life diving in Dakar. He says, I live underwater, and I can see that the areas that were so beautiful when I was young, today not only are there no fish left, but they've been replaced by plastic bottles, cans, and all sorts of things. It's painful for me. El Ali says he used to see plenty of dolphins, whales, and sharks, and he would catch fish that were his size. Now, there's barely anything left, he says. Since the sculptures were placed underwater in December, they have given rise to their own ecosystem. The clay structures are covered in barnacles, shellfish, and urchins. Fish visit frequently to find refuge and feed on algae. Umidja is a specialist of contemporary art. What she finds most interesting about the installation, she said, is that the statues look like coral, a unique sight in Dakar's barren waters.
The bay is just full of sand. There's absolutely no coral. So it's interesting to see how contemporary art is trying to mimic what nature can bring by exploring natural ingredients that can just cohabitate with the environment.
That Dakar is the contemporary art capital of the continent gives the work a particularly large platform, she says.
And people are looking at the art piece. People ask questions. And that's, I think, the beginning of the conversation to really make people involved and paying more attention.
Organizers say they plan to commission local artists to create new sculptures that will be added to the exhibit over time. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A historic drought is threatening millions of lives in the Horn of Africa. To bring immediate relief to the most vulnerable people, the United States, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, is providing nearly $105 million in humanitarian aid. This is the fourth consecutive failed rainy season, which is increasing the likelihood of famine for hundreds of thousands of people in the Horn of Africa. A fifth rainy season is forecast to be drier than average, further devastating livelihoods for families who depend on crops and livestock for food to survive. As a result, more than 16 million people need immediate humanitarian assistance. The number is expected to rise to unprecedented levels, with up to 20 million people in need of help by September. The additional funding will enable USAID partners to provide food, health, and nutrition services and access to clean water. The funding also supports safe spaces and case management for women and girls displaced by drought. Russia's brutal, unprovoked war on Ukraine is deepening the food crisis in the Horn of Africa as food, fuel, and fertilizer prices soar and shortages worsen. Like other regions in the Middle East and Africa, the Horn can no longer import wheat and other grains from Ukraine due to Russia's full-scale invasion, putting millions of women, men, and children at risk of death if they do not find sufficient food. Almost 70% of Somalia's grain and almost 10% of Kenya's come from Ukraine. The United States is the largest single country donor of humanitarian assistance to the Horn of Africa, providing more than $507 million across the region since the beginning of fiscal year 2020. But more funding is urgently required from other donors. Given the severity of the drought and the scale of humanitarian needs, the U.S. government is urging other donors to increase their assistance to prevent famine and save the lives of millions of people. The United States cannot meet the needs in the region on its own. It is time for the donor community to come together to prevent more suffering and save lives.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.